So I've got something exciting to share. My book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is now available for pre-order. It's about rethinking your drinking, not because you necessarily have to, but because deep down you know there's more waiting on the other side. It's about creating space for clarity, for calm, and the version of you that doesn't need alcohol to cope. So if you're looking for a refreshing take on alcohol identity and desire, just tap the link in the show notes and pre-order. Right, let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink podcast with me, your host, Anna Donaghy. If you've noticed that the drinking culture in the UK is changing and you're curious about why and what this means to your world, then this is the podcast for you. Throughout this series, I will be chatting with the thought-provoking, forward-thinking people at the heart of this shift to find out what makes them tick and to explore the sober curious perspective from all angles. And I'll also be giving you oodles of personal tools and tactics to help you get on board the Big Drink Rethink. Why, hello. And today my guest is Zoe Henderson, entrepreneur with a passion for health and wellness and a mindful drinking and wellness consultant. Zoe was an early functional drinks pioneer with a desire to bring more functional herbs and fungi into the mainstream. And we'll be talking about that and those kind of ingredients. Her brand Function created more mindful options for conscious consumers looking to reduce their alcohol consumption and empower their health. Now, Zoe has been in the hospitality industry across various roles for over 15 years. So there's no one better to talk to about this subject. I'm excited to have her here because I do want to talk about the rise of functional beverages because I am a bit sketchy. I'm on my own learning curve here. I want to talk to her about the rise, the science, and I want her opinion on where the drinking culture is going next. So welcome to the show, Zoe.
Thank you, Anna. It's lovely to be talking to you today. And yeah, always excited to talk about the dark arts of functional ingredients.
I think, you know, if I'm anything to go by, it's probably relatively little understood. And yet I'm about to sort of spout off some stats that suggest that, you know, it's a very growing and exciting area of the market. So yeah, I'm glad that you're excited to be talking about it as always, because I think it's something I need to understand more about and I get asked lots and lots of questions. So just before we jump in, is there anything you want to add to your intro? I always ask that because I just do a liney thing. And is there anything you want to sort of embellish?
I think you rounded it up nicely. Yeah, obviously my kind of spark for functional products has come from Function, which was my alcohol-free craft beer that I launched back in 2020. We are sadly no longer trading, but the brand is sitting there to be relaunched either by myself or potentially someone else if they would be interested in the brand in the future. But yeah, it was kind of an early adopter of the functional drinks space. A lot's moved on since then. And as you're about to divulge, the stats don't lie. It's a huge growing market and one that there's lots of exciting innovation in. So Function may have been a little bit too early, but it may rise again. Who knows?
Well, fingers crossed. I'm rooting for it. I genuinely am. I wanted to really have this conversation today because I get asked lots and lots of questions about alcohol-free and functional drinks, you know, by coaching clients as well as listeners of this podcast. And I feel distinctly more on solid ground talking about alcohol-free drinks than I do about functional. You know, some of my questions are going to be, what's even the definition, you know? So, but let's pull back a second then, as you say, start with the big picture. I think it's probably glossing over things a little bit just to say that sort of our drinking culture is changing, because I suppose the stats I'm about to talk about suggest that we're not just talking about a shift from alcohol to alcohol-free, but we're also talking beyond alcohol-free to these functional drinks. So I'm going to sound very serious here. The UK's non-alcoholic and low-alcohol beverage market has more than doubled in size by 2024 compared to 2023. Last year was a mega year, okay? And that growth is projected to continue hugely. Consumer habits massively changing. And I think the proportion of UK adults who drank alcohol dropped from 78% in August 2024 to 72% in December 2024. So, I mean, that's within the year, a significant drop. And then specifically with regards to functional drinks, the UK functional market is expected to grow. Now, these numbers are in dollars, but I think it's a global report, this one, but grow from $7.5 billion in 2024 to $10.5 within the next 10 years. So a compound growth of approximately 3% year on year. So, you know, we're talking big numbers. I hope I've got those right. Big numbers, big projections. Do you therefore think, given these big projections, particularly for functional drinks, that alcohol-free as a category now completely limits our sense of what's going on in the market?
You say you hope that those numbers are right. And that's, I think the numbers are varying a little bit. They're all extremely high. But I think because functional is moving across categories, it's kind of, we're merging. So the wellness category, where you'd find sports drinks and, low sugar drinks, diet drinks, all the energy drinks, all of these are now bringing in functional ingredients. And because the non-alcoholic sector can now talk broadly across markets and talk about messaging that around health and wellness, we're seeing lots of different categories of drinks now coming into the alcohol-free and no and low alcohol space, which is really exciting. And I think you mentioned before the definition of what not drinking is and what it means is really changing. You know, it was just before to not have alcohol. So you're in the pub and you would have a pint of lemonade if you weren't having a pint of beer. Yeah. That was it. You know, it was a sad situation, and it was, you really felt lacking in what you were drinking. And now the space is really exciting, where there's loads of other functionalities that drinks and beverages can have. They can fit lots of different occasions, and you are seeing products come in from categories which may never have even been in anywhere near the adult occasion drinking space where alcohol-free sits. So the market is really expanding, and has got the opportunity to expand so much more because of that. And that's never happened before in beverages. You know, you could never talk about health and, you know, cognitive health, better sleep, better energy connected with alcohol. The messaging was, one, illegal, and two, just not applicable. But now you have these really interesting, wider messaging coming into the adult drinking space. So yeah, it's it really has the capacity to grow.
It does. And I think, you know, even listening to you then saying, you know, it goes across the way it can go across category, and therefore not, you know, that maybe the numbers aren't even accurately reported, because, you know, you're not picking up all the numbers from other categories other than just the sort of the pure, you know, the pure sort of alcohol free sector. And I think that sort of, that adds to my confusion. And I think maybe sort of, you know, the confusion that's evident in the people that are asking me the questions that I can't answer very accurately because of my own lack of understanding. So, but what you've just said suggests to me that clearly, go back 20 years and the defining aspect of an adult drink would be whether it had an ABV content or not. And now, if you think of alcohol as an ingredient, now alcohol, sort of adult drinks, are being defined by very many different types of ingredients. So, you know, we're moving beyond that simple black and white definition, really, which is so exciting.
And that's what I always kind of hoped it would get to, where ABV is just another ingredient. And, you know, it's not about complete sobriety. That has its own corner and is very important and valid. But it's about being more mindful of the products we're putting in our bodies. You know, sometimes you might feel like a little bit of alcohol, nothing to do the next day. There's a, you know, you just feel like treating yourself, and that's fine. And you're mindful of the ABV in that product. But then during the week or the rest of the time, or when you've got stuff going on around you, you want that ABV to be lower or non-existent, but you can still have the same type of drink and you can still have the same experience. And most importantly, it can still fit in to the social situation that you want it to, whether it's dinner with your partner, whether it's in the pub, whether it's, you know, after your run, whatever it is. You know, you don't now have to feel like it's one or the other, which it very much was before. And there is a level of confusion, I think, with functional drinks, because especially for people who haven't grown up around this, I think the younger market are just super au fait with it now. Whereas, you know, older generations who grew up in this very polarized grown-ups drink alcohol, children, and, you know, the infirm or on medication drink non-alcoholic. Now we have this kind of broadening of the market. Functional drinks is a really great way to help kind of demark occasions by making these liquids more engaging and more interesting.
I think that's it. I think you probably hit on the fact that it's, you know, I'm a bit old, and it's probably a generational, it is a generational thing, it will be. But obviously where there's a lack of understanding, there can become, you know, quite a lot of cynicism or skepticism too. So we'll move on to that. But let me just talk a second about the kind of things that various audiences are interested in, you know, my understanding, given the questions I'm asked. So, you know, the sober curious, if that's what we want to sort of call the broader term, still wants something that feels like a treat, a drink that feels like a treat. And, you know, very excited about exploring drinks that will give them that without a hangover, for example. People, and I'm sort of doing inverted commas here, in recovery, you know, people who no longer want to or feel they can drink, sometimes ask me, you know, is this a slippery slope? You know, is this for me? I'm looking for a replacement, or, you know, can these drinks actually genuinely support my healing as well? That's a question I get asked. Healthcare professionals will say to me, but is there any real evidence, you know, that these drinks help with mood and focus? And of course, you know, we have people who are drinks enthusiasts. They just love the market. They love trying new things, and they love the craft and the complexity and discovering new things. And, you know, can functional drinks help there? So I think, you know, we're about to have a really interesting conversation for all of those audiences. So should we dive in? I've got a bit of a confession to make. When I first heard the term functional drink, I genuinely thought, really, you know, aren't all drinks functional? You know, they hydrate, etc. But obviously, there's a lot more than just liquid doing its job. So, what does functional actually mean in this space? Is it about the ingredients? Is it about the effect? Is it both?
Semantics is complicated, and, you know, many things mean many different things to people. And yeah, all drinks, everything has a function or a purpose if you want it to. But in terms of this space, in terms of adult occasional drinking, because don't forget, you know, energy drinks, gut health, all of these products are functional as well. And the energy drink category is huge and sits in its own very specific space. But for me, in the no and low space, functional drinks are drinks that contain other compounds that can help mimic, alleviate, contribute to XXX. So, you know, it's adding in things that could either help you feel relaxed, so with noticeable results, products like L-theanine or chamomile, for example, if that was in a product. You know, it has been proven scientifically and on plenty of studies that there are compounds in them that help you relax, or whether it's adding a small bit of caffeine or herbs that can kind of invigorate you and make you feel more elevated with, you know, kind of medicinal purposes, if you like. And it's about having something that goes past just beyond the liquid. It serves a function past that. And with the non-alcoholic space, those functions are very often the functions that you would attribute to alcohol. So feeling more relaxed, feeling a little bit buzzy, feeling calmer after a day's work. Now, I fully believe in herbs and fungi and botanicals. And, you know, there are thousands of years of evidence of their efficacy, and latterly, you know, scientific evidence of their efficacy. But the placebo effect is also something not to be discounted. And if the placebo effect makes you have a physical reaction to something in a positive way, then to me, that's an active ingredient in itself. You know, there's been various tests over the years done where people have been given pints of beer or a liquid which they've perceived to have alcohol in, and then asked to record how they felt, and they've said, oh, you know, I felt a little bit, and it's turned out there hasn't been alcohol in their products.
Yeah, sure.
That happens. And conversely, if you're told that something doesn't have something in, it can feel the same way. So you mentioned before healthcare professionals, you know, there is a little bit of skepticism around some things. Now, this for me is twofold. One, you know, we are living in a society which is changing, but we are kind of really pushing away from more traditional medicine, more natural medicine, more natural use of herbs and plants and botanicals. This is coming back more into the mainstream, but there is a little bit of skepticism around that and complicated long historical background on it. Secondly, you have legal obstacles when you're using functional herbs and fungi in your products because they're not mainstream, because they haven't been had money thrown at them and tested by larger corporations for efficacy, say like vitamin C. You know, you can talk about immunity on a product if you have a certain level of vitamin C in it, but you can't if you talk about chaga mushroom. That's not because it doesn't contain it, it's just because it hasn't had the novel approval, if you like. So you have to be careful of what you can say. So that can make things feel a little bit wishy-washy, if you like, on products. But there are ways, and we can talk about that, that brands can get around that and make sure that their messaging is super clear and is backed up by science as well.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you mentioned, you know, that, you know, we obviously these days it feels like you pretty much have to wheel out a peer-reviewed study and a lab coat to sort of back up claims and stuff. Whereas, you know, there is a strong sense that in other cultures that is simply not the case, because ancient wisdom and sort of passed down tradition, as far as medicine is concerned, is very, very credible, but maybe more credible than in this. But I think what it does is, you know, this, and maybe this is my old advertising brain kicking in as well, after years of helping brands spin stories and find their sort of perfect unique selling point. You know, what is it that's, you know, what does it do? You know, is always a sort of question within sort of advertising. What does it do? I guess I'm a bit sort of skeptical and suspicious by nature. So when I hear about things like adaptogens or nootropics and functional mushrooms, part of me is really, really curious. Part of me is incredibly curious, but part of me is also saying, do they actually work? Or is this clever branding? You know, having been involved in branding all my life, is this part of a clever story? I guess the answer is to that sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it's both. It's like this in all products. You know, greenwashing is a huge thing in products and services that we have to tackle. You know, bunging natural on something, fresh on something, has all these connotations of goodness. You know, farm fresh. There's a scandal going on with supermarkets at the moment, calling brands, you know, Little Brook Farm, whatever, and it's never seen a farm in its life, but you see it and you think, oh, you know, a little old farmer and his wife are making this product, so it must be good for me. So there's always that issue with people taking words and products and spinning them, you know, finding an ingredient that is healthy. Turmeric, for example, really came massively back into the market in food and beverages over the last 10 years, you know, and its active component, curcumin, is massively beneficial and anti-inflammatory. But that's not to say that everything that's colored yellow on the market with turmeric does have high enough levels in it. So it's something that I think it's down to brands to be, and it's on the onus of brands, not consumers, because it's so confusing in the marketplace. You could say, well, you need to research the products and the ingredients yourself to make sure it's not on you as a consumer. It's on the brands to really show what ingredients is in their product, show the evidence, whether that's, you know, peer review studies, case studies, their own research, if they've been able to, you know, kind of work with institutions to do research, which a lot of functional brands are doing now. And all of this adds to the validity of your brand, and then just make your messaging super clear, so it's really obvious to customers the benefits, but also the transparency of the ingredients as well. And
that's it, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially with you know, when you come to functional mushrooms, we are living in a microphobic society still. You know, we do have lots of mushrooms in the UK, but over hundreds of years, it's kind of been pushed out of our culture to forage and use mushrooms for medicinal purposes, whether it's in Scandinavia. Mushroom foraging is still huge. Families will go out regularly throughout the season and forage. And in China, you know, hundreds of mushrooms are used, and many of mushrooms are used for medicinal purposes. And, you know, your grandmother has always put reishi in a soup or a stew, you know, through winter to keep you healthy. And you've always had chaga as a tea to keep off the colds and flus. And it's just so much more ingrained in the culture. So there is this kind of like, you know, dark arts feeling around it. But again, it's really on brands to kind of broaden the consumer's opinion on this.
I agree with that. I think there is, literally, as you were talking about it then, it's exactly that. I mean, look, I absolutely love mushrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had it drilled into me from a very young age that you do not just pick a mushroom and eat it. You know, that there's some dangerous mushrooms out there. Now, obviously, people aren't going to be putting those kind of mushrooms in drinks and stuff, but it raises, it's just that little mental barrier. Mm. And to overcome it, I guess, I agree that the onus has got to be on the brand owner. But, you know, they have a product that they believe works and they believe is of merit to the consumer. So it's clearly on them if they want to influence and persuade to do a good job in terms of transparency and education. I agree. And who do you think is doing that well, Zoe? I know, you know, I don't know whether you want to come down biased towards one, you know, but as a consumer, looking at it through those eyes, are there sort of, are there ingredients that you feel are really interesting and could best be explained, you know, could really do with a little PR job done around them?
Yeah.
And also then the brands who are doing it well, the brand owners who are doing it well?
Yeah. I think I always lean into the mushrooms because I'm fungi first. Yeah,
you're a mushroom lady.
My mentality. Lion's Mane is an incredible mushroom, and it has been getting a lot of press, and a lot of, you know, peer-reviewed studies are published. There's a lot of research going on about it for cognitive health, Alzheimer's, cognitive decline on the serious end, and the more, you know, everyday end, your memory, your focus. It's had a lot of press across all categories: health and wellness, food and beverage, you know, kind of midlife, post-life wellness. It's amazing for menopause. So that's really had some great press around it. You know, my mum cut an article out that she read in the Times about Lion's Mane for the menopause, you know, and someone else sent me an article about Lion's Mane for biohacking from, you know, some other publication. And so it really is kind of coming more to the mainstream, which is great. So that is a great product to lean into. But what we're seeing brands having to do, and it's something that I wished I'd done with Function, would definitely do again, is creating kind of unique blends to your product. So putting an ingredient in is one thing, but if you create a unique proprietary blend that you can TM, it's even better. And obviously then it gives a unique kind of USP to your product, but also shows consumers that you understand what works well. Imposter Brew, Mark has done a great job on that, and he has got his Social Blend, I think it's called, which is in their product, which is a blend of adaptogens, mushrooms, and then Collider, have done a similar thing in their newly launched alcohol-free beer, which looks incredible. My original favorite, who's been going since before I started Function, is Three Spirit. And they are really very unapologetic herbal botanists that are creating these incredible liquids that are having a physical effect, whether that be placebo driven, but packed with incredible herbs and botanicals in their very own unique blend. And they've come from it from a very scientific view. The founders have, you know, they are botanists and they are scientists, and they have really developed products mindfully. So their Livener contains lots of ingredients that does help pep you up. You know, it helps kind of give you an energizer. Their nighttime blend contains valerian and products that we know are kind of reducing that. But what Three Spirit have also been doing is they've been doing partner research with universities and, you know, publishing papers on their ingredients, which I think is a really interesting thing. Now, there are lots of grants around for brands that thinking this could be interesting, but I can't afford to do it. You know, you don't have to dig deep and spend $100,000 of your own money getting peer groups and scientists together. You can pair with institutions. And because of post-COVID, people really looking for immunity, helping to support a healthier society, there's lots of funding around to help do that and work with institutions to research ingredients of interest as well. So I think there's lots of opportunities for brands to showcase their ingredients, and it's something that consumers love.
The irony is not lost on me, though, that when it comes to trying new products or exploring a market that might feel a little bit intimidating, we look for science and I suppose credibility, and yet we're willing to pour alcohol down our throats,
right,
ridiculous rate, deliberately choosing to ignore the science. Isn't it bonkers though? But also knowing that there is no labeling, there's no ingredients, there's no breakdown of nutrients or anything like that. It's literally just we drink it blindly. And we wouldn't apply the same to this very exciting and potentially very beneficial market.
Yeah, it's bonkers. And it's one of those things people are like, oh, well, I want to see the science before I do it. I don't want to take this herb or botanical until I've seen the science on it. Even though, you know, drinking it, it might not have an effect. I have to see the science. But yeah, you're doing something, vaping, you know, smoking. You do something that there's a lot of science and, you know, deaths connected to using this product, not just science, but, you know, actual body counts of people that have overindulged in it. And yet people still think it's acceptable. And I think there's lots of moving parts and it's really shifting a mindset. And it's very difficult to undo hundreds of years of extremely clever marketing around alcohol and who you are when you drink alcohol and what the effect is when you drink alcohol. You're funny, you're sexy, you're the life of the party. And without it, you lose all these things suddenly. Oh, yeah. Like I said, the younger generations who haven't been conditioned with that marketing are definitely have a different mindset to drinking, the ingredients in their drinks, the drinking occasions, but anyone kind of, you know, 30 plus even or 40 plus, it's a lot harder for us to undo that conditioning. But what's exciting is, you know, we do all have science on our side and brands can really help push that in the functional space as well, not just kind of letting people know, you know, removing alcohol is one thing and changing your drinking habits of a lifetime. Getting someone in, you know, their mid-60s to suddenly throw in a load of mushrooms and CBD could just seem a little bit, you know, woo-woo. But I think it will come with time.
it's literally, you know, this exciting new expansive range of potentially, you know, medicinal and beneficial products over here. I want proof. You know, I want the clinical trials. I want the science. I want the works. Mm. This stuff over here, which I've been drinking for yonks and yonks and yonks, I'll ignore all of that. it is bonkers. But of course, You alluded a while ago to, you know, things like mushrooms and herbs and the adaptogens that do have centuries of sort of lived traditional knowledge behind those ingredients, sort of ancient wisdom. Mm. We haven't embraced that as a culture. It's I suppose, and I'm not singling out the UK. That's not as compelling in the Western world as it is in other parts of the world. It's not as compelling as the science, but you think, or you suggested that might be changing in your mind, or at least beginning to sort of shift a little bit.
I think it is. And I think that's happened with the amazing breadth of information that we can have now in our connected world. You know, people are having access more to cultures and, you know, ways of traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine. You know, before people heard about these things, and unless you found a book on it or knew someone who was into it, it all seemed a bit hippie and woo-woo. But now, you know, you go online, you can find this information, you can, you know, do your own kind of fact checking and researching around it and look at it from different sources, and you can really tap into these cultures and you can go, oh wow, okay, so someone, you know, the Chinese have been using reishi for over 4,000 years. Look, I found a picture of it in an ancient text. You know, it was used as their royal medicine for longevity for their royal families. Wow, okay, cool. You know, no one's going to use something for 2,000 years if it's killing everyone and it's making, you know, them sick or what have you. So I think the fact that we are more connected, and again, younger generations are way more connected than, you know, say, the 65 plus, but then again, that is changing. And I talk about the 65 plus because there is an actual market, you know, the people who are spending money on alcohol regularly, the bottles of wine, the gins and tonic, who are really engaged in that traditional culture of, you know, as soon as you finish work, you have a drink, you know, you go to the pub. That's a really huge market. And we shouldn't focus all our energy on the youth and the kids who are so au fait with this. You almost don't need to market to them as much. You do need to help educate and let older generations know, because they too are looking for these products, and even with more importance than younger people, because this is like, okay, you have to stop drinking now because, you know, you're going to have a heart attack, or you have to reduce your alcohol because you're worried about dementia. Or so it's really important that we help get this information across to all categories, all markets.
Absolutely. And of course, if there are you know, true medicinal health benefits to some of these drinks, then that's an age group looking for health benefits, remedies, you know, assistance, you know, with their health. So it's a huge opportunity. It's a huge opportunity here for brands to, you know, to get it right, and or the industry to come together and do some educational work as well. But I just wanted to pick up on something you said, because, I mean, maybe it's my associations again, I sort of, the, you know, the branding. Maybe it's when you talk about things like botanicals and the health benefits, I start to think, I suppose, of functional drinks maybe slotting neatly into a health regime, you know, something that you might have in the morning alongside a sort of 6 o'clock cold plunge and, you know, a bit of journaling. But of course, for many, many people, drinking isn't about function, you know, it's about feeling as well. And it's about sociability, it's emotional. Of course it is, you know, that's how alcohol has crept into the very fabric of our, so, you know, society. For many people, it's that sense of kind of like, oh, at the end of a day, or the uplift in seeing friends. Can functional drinks, in your mind, Zoe, offer that same sense of sociability? Or am I wrong to think it's something you sort of have at home alongside other, you know, trying to eat more greens and stuff like that?
I think there's two points. One, we are creatures of habit, you know, and we're creatures of ceremony and ritual, and we are social creatures, and the social ceremonies that we have in our life are so vital. And you're right, it's that feeling of, I finished my working day, or I finished, you know, doing whatever I need to do in the day, and now it's time to relax with my partner, with my friends, on my own, to just kind of chill. And alcohol has filled that occasion. And again, all brands will think of their products as, what occasions do they fit into? And yes, obviously, we're now in this world where the health and wellness world is coming into adult occasion drinking, and this has never happened before. It's a new landscape. So it is quite interesting to navigate, and can be confusing, because now you do have a product that is a wellness product that does have a function in your early part of your day. Mm-hmm. You know, I consume lots of mushrooms. I have mushrooms in my coffee in the morning, and I like mushrooms in my beer in the afternoon. And now I can't get function. I have my mushroom tinctures, and I put it into my alcohol-free beer. So I kind of
I have an image of you having like mushroom pajamas and mushroom duvet, and just, you
know. Well, I have got a mushroom tattoo, yes, on my arm.
So, I am
slowly morphing into a mycelial woman. But, you know, we are these creatures of habit, so it's very important to have these rituals, of which imbibing stuff is one of these rituals. Alcohol has plugged that occasion point. So now we're unraveling that and putting different liquids into that occasion point. But you know, you drink liquids throughout the day. So, you know, you have a cup of tea, you have, if you think of it all about liquid, yes, you will be drinking some functional drinks during the day, for sure, because now you've got health and wellness products coming into the adult occasion. But when we talk about drinks, you know, we're talking about the adult occasion space, which is, you know, not just evenings, but places where you would have drunk alcohol. Like you said, that drink that's a little bit special, you know, a smoothie packed with greens and maybe some adaptogens and mushrooms and, you know, whatever. It's not exciting, you know, but having something in a beautiful glass with a nice decoration, you know, with your friends, relaxing, is an occasion. So it's about understanding now that the landscape has changed, and no longer it is just with alcohol or without, and actually you will have similar ingredients and similar drinks repurposed throughout your day, throughout your month, throughout your life, just fitting your occasion point. So actually, from a brand perspective, it does the job of really making you think about kind of addressing your customer segmentation and then also your occasion points, you know. And the graph is a bit messy, because you can have a certain type of consumer. So our main group was the healthy hedonist, you know, and they would have mushrooms in the day, in the morning, in their coffee, but then they'd also want mushrooms in their beer in the evening, or they'd want to drink three spirit, which kind of gives them a bit of a buzz, or Sentia, which would give them a buzz in the evening. So it's kind of your consumer groups, and then underneath it, your occasions are now, the ingredients are kind of mixing up into different occasions. So it's a lot for brands to focus on, but I think if you just spend that bit at the time of launching your brand to really nail that and understand it, it does make it easier when it comes to messaging, for sure. And it makes it clearer for the customer when and how to drink your drink.
Well, from a, you know, from the perspective of having been a sort of a strategist in that brand space, it's, you know your audience, know exactly what they're looking for, you know, what gaps you're filling, your day parts, where you fit in, you know, what you're offering, what they're going to thank you for. And that, as you say, it can change. You know, you can have one individual audience and have many, many different types of occasions, which obviously then provides you the opportunity, as you were saying earlier, to have many different sort of derivatives or variants to fit the bill. So I just keep coming back to the fact it's a huge opportunity. It makes me want to get back. I know I don't want to get back into advertising, but it does, you know, it's certainly, you know, I would find it a very exciting area to work on. I've got to ask you then, you mentioned Sentia, you've mentioned Three Spirit before. Are these kind of the closest thing to the social buzz that somebody might be looking for if we're taking a functional drink into a social space as opposed to part of a sort of a daytime at home regime? Are those still sort of leading in that regard? I mean, because people, you know, I don't want to sort of fuel people who are trying to sort of wean themselves off all kind of buzz, but I do get asked the question by some people as to, you know, what is the closest legal, safe thing that I can have in a non-alcoholic drink that will give me that, you know, they're looking for it.
I mean, humans love getting high. You know, we've eaten fermented fruit since they've fallen off the trees. You know, we like to have something outside of our daily base level, I guess. And, you know, whether that's people loving roller coasters because you get the buzz from the endorphins, you know, and the fact that we are so susceptible to social media because of the dopamine hits. It's like our brains are wired to reward. And, you know, we do like to get these kind of little feelings of euphoria and feelings of a bit of a buzz. These, like I said, I think there's a lot of placebo with that as well. And even the placebo with alcohol, you know, is the alcohol actually making you feel relaxed? Yes, it does trigger parts of your brain. But, you know, the fact that you've got the drink and now you go, ah, I feel relaxed. You're kind of pushing that momentum forward. But in terms of drinks that do replicate kind of pathways, and Professor David Nutt has worked on Sentia and was developed it, you know, scanning people's brains and understanding what parts of your brain light up when you've had alcohol and actually what are the closest compounds in nature that recreate that. So I would say Sentia is definitely the market leader at the moment in the UK, certainly, that kind of triggers the same pathways in your brain that alcohol does, for sure. But it was interesting. BrewDog opened their alcohol-free pub in London, in Shoreditch, a few years back now. I think if it's still there, it's half and half, but it definitely was all alcohol. And I went there when it opened on a Friday night. It was full. We all were drinking pints of alcohol-free beer. The tunes were on, you know, and I felt a bit buzzy, you know, it was great. I was meeting a girlfriend for a drink. Everyone was drinking pints and beers and the music was going and I felt a little bit buzzy and it was great. Was that the beer? Chemically, probably not, but it was the social situation that it fitted into. So yeah, it's like we said, it's an interesting path for all of us, reconditioning what a social occasion is without alcohol. You know, people who don't drink alcohol culturally don't seem to have a problem having big parties and celebrations and without it.
No, of course. And this is obviously the most, you know, common of conversations I have with coaching clients, which is about, you know, if you take alcohol out of a social gathering, you'll still have a social gathering. If you sit and drink alcohol on its own with no stimulus, no other people, you know, it becomes really quite flat. It's, you know, it's the social aspect. It's symbiotic, but it's the social aspect that
it's complex.
The alcohol occasion. It's not necessarily alcohol that lifts the social occasion. It's a funny one, but you've got to pull it apart and find, you know, it's just so inextricably linked. But this one's close to my heart because I've had, you know, my own issues with alcohol addiction, and I know it's going to be many, you know, many listeners are going to be sort of thinking about this too. While functional drinks might be marketed as healthy and calming and mood boosting, for someone in recovery or someone just trying to stay alcohol free with a nervous system that's potentially a bit fragile, something that promises to change your state can feel a bit loaded. It could potentially feel, is that is that going to be a bit triggering, you know, particularly when you think about ingredients like CBD, and you mentioned, you know, reishi and things like that. They raise questions, I guess, you know, are they safe for people who are in recovery, or, as I say, have a nervous system that potentially needs a bit of protection and is a bit fragile? Are they going to affect clarity? Can they be triggering, do you think?
I think there's not a one answer for everyone, which is the first off, which is frustrating. I think every case is different. People who have serious issues with alcohol, not just, you know, drink a bit too much on a Friday night, but dependency issues, and like you said, have a nervous system probably quite affected and frazzled by this dependency, need to assess their own personal situation. There are some people who are new to recovery who cannot be in an environment where alcohol is. So going to a pub is a no-go. Even if you're sitting outside drinking a pint of Coke, you just don't want to be in that environment. You know, going to a club, going to a wedding, you just have to not do these things for a while whilst you kind of heal and get your body back to normal. So yeah, you know, if you drink a drink with an ingredient in it that can make you feel a bit buzzy, that could even just be caffeine. You know, there are products on the market, alcohol-free products that contain little small amounts of caffeine to give you a little bit of a pep up. That can be triggering as well. And sometimes you just have to be really kind to yourself and say, you know, it's not your fault, but you might just have to kind of peace out for a while from those situations that trigger you. Are they safe? Yes, safety, you know, they are safe, but again, it's like a tiny bit of alcohol to a child is not safe, but it's safe to an adult. So, you know, we're all very different. So I think it's really important to be kind on yourself and understand where your need states are. You know, am I looking for a product that tastes like beer? No, because if I drink four alcohol-free beers and feel like I've had a beer, I might just go and have a beer, and I really don't want to do that. So some people just do not want to have the taste of anything that resembles alcohol at all. And they'd much rather, you know, move on to drinking fruit spritzers or something that's just completely different. So every situation is different. And, you know, the sobriety market and the recovery market is really important. And it's very important that brands don't try and tap into that market for a financial gain when they're not really understanding the need states of their consumers. And I think if you are going through, if you are willing to market a product for recovery, you really have to be conscious of it, and you have to come from it from a very professional standpoint, and understanding the responsibility that that has on you as a brand, because these people are in fragile positions, and it's not just a market that you just want to flog a product to. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think that's a brilliant answer. So I'm conscious of time. So let's just get practical for a second. If someone is looking to start exploring the world of functional drinks, it can feel like sort of falling into a very interesting but sort of slightly overwhelming rabbit hole. I love the idea, by the way. So I was going to ask you, well, where do you start? But I actually, picking up on what you were just saying, I love the idea of applying principles of mindfulness to your selection. So, you know, I always say to people, you know, what job are you asking alcohol to do? How do you want to feel? Okay. And how do you feel now? And how do you want to feel? So we know that it's a good place to start potentially with functional drinks, which have as many variants as, you know, loads of options out there. Potentially a good place to start would be that question. How do I want to feel? It's a functional drink. It's going to potentially offer to do something for me. What do I want it to do? Is that a sound place to start, as good as any?
Yeah. I think, what do you want to feel, but also what do you like? You know, I strangely never really like beer that much. I like the taste of it, but I'm quite small, and drinking two or three pints of full strength beer, I would feel bloated and get a headache and feel quite sick and need to go home if I drank three whole pints of full strength beer. But I like the taste of it. So alcohol free beer for me was great, because it fitted the thing of, I could drink a bottle of it or a can of it with other friends drinking bottles and cans of beer, and I wouldn't feel like I was having something, you know, I wasn't there with my can of Coke. I wouldn't feel like I was ostracized from the occasion. I loved the taste of it, but I didn't like the headiness that I got when it contained alcohol. And I loved the fact that it contained medicinal mushrooms. One thing I just want to quickly add about functional products is the fact that We're in a society where things are expected to work quickly. So I have a headache, I'm going to take a Nurofen quickly. I have, you know, an issue, there's a pill for it, there's something for it, and there's an immediacy in our need state now, which is increasing and increasing. But traditional medicine and natural products don't necessarily work immediately. That's not to say that there are some things that you can take, obviously ingredients that do give you a slight feeling. But when you're talking about adaptogens, when you're talking about mushrooms, things that help build your immunity, things that help contribute to cognitive health, these things work over time. So you're not, you know, you wouldn't have drunk a can of my beer and be like, oh my gosh, I instantly feel sharper. You might do at the end of the night, because traditionally after five beers, you would not feel sharp and, you know, you would not feel good the next morning. Yeah, so you were replacing it with something positive. But, you know, if you ingest a certain amount of lion's mane mushroom every month over a few years, or even every week over a few months, it will start to help have a benefit for your cognitive health. You know, that is proven in lots and lots of different scientific studies. So first of all, what do you like? Do you like beer? Do you like wine? Do you want to have that feeling? You know, do you want to replicate that taste? Is it a fancy glass? You love a cocktail? Or do you just want something in a pint that you can get on draft? So first of all is to say, what do I like drinking? What would I like to drink? And then how do I want to feel with that? You know, do I just want to feel like I'm fitting in? And it can be a physical feeling, not just an internal one. Do I want to feel like I'm fitting in? Do I want to feel like I have a bit of a buzz? Do I want to feel calm? Am I conscious of that I get a bit nervous in social situations, or I've got a very stressful job? Do I want to calm at the end of the day? And then luckily, you know, you don't have to do a whole spreadsheet for your drinking decisions every time you want to drink.
Decision tree.
You start to understand what it is that you're looking for. And now we have so many products, you can really help find that as well, which is great. So yeah, what do you want? What do you like? And what do you want to feel like?
Yeah, that makes total sense. And of course, I've stupidly omitted the idea of what do you like, because, you know, as it's something we drink at the end of the day, something we consume, and if it tastes like shit, we're not going to enjoy it. So
there's the taste, but there's also your preference. So, you know, if you are a wine drinker, then saying, nope, you can't drink wine anymore, you have to drink alcohol-free beer, you're going to be like, I don't like this, you know. But if you suggest something that's more like a cordial or an alcohol-free wine or de-alcoholized wine like Naughty, suddenly you're like, okay, I understand this category. I understand this. It's the same glass. It's the same kind of, you know, bottle. So
it's got to feel
comfortable. Yeah, it's got to feel comfortable to you as well.
Brilliant. Okay. Final question for you. And this has been an education for me, so thank you so much. I do have one final question for you. What excites you most about the future of functional drinks? So mushrooms, I'm guessing.
They're finally coming back around. You know, they've been biding their time patiently for millennia, and we have utilized and worked with fungi and plants since the beginning of time, and many cultures and tribes and indigenous wisdom still do lean into that. We live in a very commercial world, in a very money-driven world, and there are lots of products on the market that are bad for you. Straight up will kill you, are bad for you, will change your behavior, will change your mood, will change your gut microbiome, but they're pushed to us. So anything that kind of goes back to doing stuff that makes you empower your own health and is a bit of a two fingers up to the fast food, you know, pretend food movement that's happening in the West, I just think is brilliant. And if we can start to tap into this ancient wisdom about using herbs and botanicals to help us perform at our best, to help us be the best human that we can be, and not to rely on chemical laden food and drinks, artificial additives to sustain us, I just think is brilliant. I feel like people are taking a move more in towards empowering their health. You know, we don't want to be sick and dependent on medicines if we don't need to be. We don't want to be sick and not be able to live our best lives mentally and physically as well. So seeing people being able to empower themselves through the food and drinks that they consume, I'm like, right on.
And I guess off the back of that, there's a huge opportunity here to support the small brand owner, to support the more manufacturer, because they're the ones who are the botanists, the foragers, the ones who are less likely to be doing the function washing rather than the big, you know, the big brands who are like going, oh gosh, look at where the market's going, we must have an offer, and just sort of tilt their main offering towards the functional sector. You know, people who are genuinely doing stuff out of passion and knowledge of the ingredients in this space. So, but how do you find, I said I asked you my last question, but I've just got another one now. Is there somewhere where any listener to this show can go and see a great range of functional drinks online, or is it literally about sort of needing to read the kind of likes of Lono magazine and understand the individual producers and where they're selling?
Yeah, there are, it's not all kind of in one place, because obviously they're sitting across these different categories. But, you know, Club Soda is an amazing resource for what's happening in alcohol-free. Better Without app is also a brilliant app. And online stores like the Virgin Mary Bar, which I think still operate online, have got a great functional drinks range. But it's not like the functional drinks warehouse. I think you look in your communities that you're helping find out information about alcohol-free, and because of how the market is growing, there will be functional products in there for sure.
Brilliant.
You know, and social media is a great place to find stuff as well, as much as it can be a bit of a minefield. But, you know, do your research, find a product. And then if you do still have these doubts, if the product itself doesn't tell you, on my website, I used to have, you know, link to scientific studies, link to resources, so you could go and do your own deep dive. And most good brands who are using functional ingredients do have that. They have extra information about their products. But if you find a product that you think looks interesting and you, you know, you suffer from feeling a little bit tired, and maybe you want something that's going to kind of rejuvenate you a bit more, if you find a functional drinks that claims to do that, look at the ingredients. If they can't tell you about the ingredients, you know, spend 10-15 minutes, you know, have a little Google and have a little look about the ingredients themselves. You know, I think it's worthwhile if you're confused about a product and you can't get that information from a brand, just to kind of do a bit of a deep dive on it. But like I said, there are some great brands in the market, and a lot of them are, a good brand does realize that you have to educate your consumer and you have to help your consumer. Brands do get, and it's, you can't help it, but you get in your world, in your bubble, and you think everybody knows about functional mushrooms, and you go, oh, actually, most people don't. So just always make sure that you're giving your consumers as much information as possible about these amazing ingredients that you're using because of their incredible benefits. And I think that's going to really help drive consumer trust as well.
Well, you've started that education. You've advanced my education no end. Zoe, so thank you so much for coming on. I totally appreciate your time, and I know that listeners will as well.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find out more about the Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebeliefscoach.com. That's the Beliefs, BELIEFS coach.com, where you will see clear links to the show.